Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Purple Insider. Matthew Collar here inside TCO Performance Center. Want to bring you a few things from press conferences, and then I have a fun conversation with Kevin Seifert of ESPN. So let's just get into it right away with Adam Thielen. And one of the things that Adam Thielen was asked about today was vibes, which, you know, has been a big part of the conversation. And Kevin and I will get to that later with our thoughts. But Adam Thielen was asked specifically about the fact that during practices, Kevin O'Connell rarely ever seems to get too worked up when the team makes a mistake. We don't look over and see Kevin O'Connell's eyeballs bulging out of his head or see him screaming at players. And Adam Thielen gave his thoughts about where that type of approach could have some value.
No, I think that's what's really cool is you're kind of almost like, it's kind of almost awkward when things aren't going well and you're like waiting for, you know, coach to blow up. But the positivity and the energy that they bring, even when things aren't going well, is something that's really going to set us up to handle adversity. The way that they can coach through those tough moments when we, you know, put a couple balls on the ground or things are a little lackadaisical. There's a sense of urgency still, so he's still on us. But the way that they can coach through those is something I think is going to really set us up to handle that adversity through a season.
Also from Adam Thielen's press conference, if you guys remember earlier this year, Justin Jefferson made it very clear what his goal is for this season, and that's to end the year being talked about as the best wide receiver in the entire NFL. So Adam Thielen tried to contextualize what Justin Jefferson meant by his comments about that and setting his goal to be the best in the NFL. And also he was asked as a follow-up just about Jefferson specifically and his attention to detail.
You know, I think if you look at the whole, picture of what he said, he said that that's his goal, that he knows that he's not there right this second, but that's his goal. But that's exciting, right? That's what you want. You want a guy that believes in himself, that's confident. We're confident in him. We know what he's capable of. And if he keeps putting the work in, that he definitely has an opportunity to do that. So, I think that just shows his maturity level, that he's not saying, that he's not proclaiming it right now, but he's saying that I'm working towards that. So I think that shows a lot about his maturity level and where he's at in his career.
What are some of the things that he does that allow him to play beyond his years for such a young guy?
Yeah, I think it's his ability to pretty much do everything. Not a lot of guys in this league can be a deep threat, to be an underneath guy that can shake and move, to play outside, to play inside. And really do it at the highest level at all of those different criterias. So that's what's impressive. I mean, that's what I noticed from day one when he came in here, the ability to do everything. And that's like a coach's dream. I mean, these coaches that haven't seen him before in person, they come in and they're kind of like, wow, this is awesome, just because it's literally a coach's dream.
All right, we also spoke with Ed Donatell, the Vikings defensive coordinator, and a big part of that discussion was the 3-4 defense. And now we know that the 3-4 is just their base defense, but they're not going to use it as often as they will the nickel and the dime. But the defensive ends / outside linebackers will still be doing a lot of different things. And Donatell talked about how that's different from the 4-3.
Yeah, there's things. You know, these outside edge guys, you know, and Mike Smith does a great job coaching our edges, and it's a craft. It's a doggone craft, and it's easy to say set an edge, but there's so much information that goes into it, so much toughness, so much ruggedness. so much transition to rush, when to, when not to, all these things coming to you on the edge. So that's a place. The other thing that makes that tough is a lot of the guys that play that position are 4-3 ends in college. And so when they got to come up, there's a year usually for, you know, a transition involved in that. So that's a tough one. The rest of the stuff is similar. Now, secondary isn't a lot different. Okay, it's really the edges and the setup.
Also, the 3-4 base defenses have become a little more in vogue with the Vic Fangio system being copied throughout the league. And Donatell went into some depth about how his past in the 4-3 was helpful and why the 3-4 has become so popular throughout the league.
It's always evolving. The 3-4 has. It's evolved since we've been together these last 11 years, Vic and I. But it just really comes down to your personnel. Now, this group won't look the same as any other group we've coached because every group's different. And when you've coached enough different groups, you know how to adjust it as a coach. And it's a tremendous advantage to have been 4-3 because you know what things you want to draw from both systems. And I like all those teachers that I had in the early part of my 3-4 education and then being with Vic.
3-4 has become as involved as it has been the last year.
I like it. There's a reason for it. It's really the RPOs. Guys, when they're standing up, they can see more. All the jet and fly motion. So there's so many things happening to the edges of your defense that those guys have to have information. And when their hands in the dirt and they're down low, they don't see those things, and it makes it difficult to play.
Okay, that's enough for the press conferences for today. Let's get into my conversation with Kevin Seifert of ESPN. Kevin, you have made plenty of appearances on the show. We've talked XFL. We've talked big picture NFL stuff, rules, referees. But you know what we haven't done? We haven't done a pod since you were back on the beat. So how are you doing? How are you enjoying camp? Are you grinding?
I'm good. I'm rising and grinding every day, which I'm told is what we do in training camp. I was telling somebody the other day that the last time I was on the Vikings beat or any team beat on a daily basis, Twitter didn't exist. Or at least if it existed, none of us had it.
Right.
2007 was the last year. So things have changed a bit in terms of how we deliver information to the audience, which we used to call the readers, and now it's the audience. But in the end, it's still football. It's still gauging how well we think they're going to be or play or not play. And we go from there.
And the bones of it are still the same. And you know what I've really discovered, though? That even though it's not in a newspaper form and people don't have to wait until the next day to get it, that sending out training camp updates is sort of cute and sort of fun. And our friend Judd Zulgad, I went back and looked at all of his old ones from when they first got Twitter, and he was a complete lunatic about it, as you might expect. Yeah. But still, what I find is that readers want the information in stories and want to know what's going on, and they want to learn about their players. And so even though it's like eating a cookie on Twitter, people still want the full meal. So I don't think that fundamentally a lot of this has changed, except for maybe you get the reaction a lot faster and directly at you, as opposed to maybe someone writes an angry email or something to the newspaper.
Yeah, there used to be very little feedback at all. Even when I first started newspapers in the Stone Ages, we didn't have newspaper emails, so people had to write letters and put them in the post box, if people know what those are, and have the postal service deliver it to us, and that's how we found out what they thought of what we wrote. And so now there's very instant return on that. I've been trying to figure out, and I don't know how you feel about it, like people obviously will look at your tweets if you're telling them what's happening at this minute in training camp. I wonder if it's just kind of a side bit of gravy that people get, or is that actually where people are getting their information, and do we need to value that as like that has to be our best stuff?
I think we massively overrate social media.
Okay.
I think it's still the reports that are coming out that have the full story that people are interested in. And maybe that's giving them too much credit, but my experience in Purple Insider is people listen to the whole show. And when I pull the things from press conferences that I think are interesting, as opposed to just like a little tweet, and we have more of a conversation about them, I think people like that more. And at least by the open rates of the newsletter, like that's where they're getting a lot of their stuff, is reading the whole thing as opposed to just the tweets. So I think that, you can leave an impression from Twitter. Like, for example, Garrett Bradbury loses a couple of reps and all the questions the next day are like, hey, is this going to be a huge problem? Like, spoiler alert, yes. But I think that there's little nuggets that people could take from that. But if you're trying to really paint the whole picture of a training camp, it has to be in a longer form. And football fans, I think, just have time for it.
Yeah, I think that's probably the case. And you mentioned like Garrett Bradbury. You also run the risk, I think, sometimes of saying, like, if you put out that he had a really bad 5-minute period, then that means he needs to be cut, you know. And no, it's he had a really bad 5-minute period, and guess Justin Jefferson's going to have a bad 5-minute period. And we need to, I think, one thing we do lose on Twitter is the context of in the broader sense, because we don't have enough room to include all of that.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And I tweet less and less and less because of that.
Yeah.
Especially because one tweet, I mean, how about the other day? So I tweeted Kirk Cousins' quote about Zach Davidson almost running 21 miles per hour.
Yeah.
And got a bunch of responses that were like, let's see before we crown him. And it's like, I didn't say anything here.
Right.
So the sort of, I don't know how this works in people's brains of like connecting one thing to the other based on this very small piece of information. I think that it's like doing a disservice to tweet out too many things that could leave an impression. Like, we now have to think about that stuff as opposed to when Twitter first came out, it was like, tweet as much as you can.
Yeah.
Fans will love it. It's like, I think we have to be more like thoughtful in how, like, what we tweet out and observing from training camp.
And I've seen that happen. You see it happen in politics a lot where somebody will, a reporter will tweet out something that a politician said and it spreads like wildfire, and maybe they didn't hear it right. Maybe like one word was off a little bit. Maybe they had a typo that, you know, we all have typos. And so I thought about that too. It's like, there's going to be something I'll probably get myself in trouble with in covering the Vikings this year. I don't want it to be something that I tweet.
Well, I feel the same way. It's just like, it's not really worth it to me. Let it be the story of the century on the Vikings. If they're going to be upset about rather than a tweet. So let's talk about what we've seen. Here's how we can frame this. Cause I promised you we'd have some fun and there's like,
and I'm counting on, I'm going to storm out if we don't.
Okay. All right. So we'll really toe that line to make sure it's fun for you. Let's do it this way. Is this a thing? Let's do it that way.
Okay.
So I'm going to throw some stuff at you that have been storylines. You tell me if it's a thing.
Okay.
Great place to start would be Garrett Bradbury.
Yeah.
Struggled the last few years. I don't think he's shown anything to make me think it would be different. And this coaching staff and front office decided to buy in, but then all of a sudden we see Chris Reed taking second team center snaps.
Yeah.
Is this a thing with Chris Reed and second team center snaps and with Bradbury struggling, or is it just going to be Bradbury's job? Like, what do you think of that situation?
I don't think it's a thing right now. I don't know if that toes the line well enough or not, but if they're already in week two of training camp, after deciding, having the whole offseason to decide whether they want to go with this guy as a starting center or not, I'd be shocked if they've already started, you know, having second thoughts. I don't think we're that, it could be, that could be the case. And they haven't really set themselves up to have, I mean, Chris Reed, obviously, you know, some of the other guys they signed, you know, can play center in a pinch and as part of their value as a multi-positional backup type guy. But, you know, they haven't really set themselves up to have an obvious answer if he isn't going to be it, if they're not going to be able to play him. And so I feel like they've kind of, you know, they've tied themselves to him, at least for a while. There's always cuts around Labor Day, you know, the final cuts and guys come available. There's trades that happen all the way up till the middle of the season and the trade deadline. And so it's not like they're completely 100%, you know, stuck if he doesn't work out, but they haven't given themselves, it's not the type of situation where you often see where people are hedging, you know, there's no hedge here, at least on the roster right now.
I think it might be a thing.
Okay.
If they go through these next few weeks, because we have what, 7 practices in 8 days.
Yeah.
I feel like this is dog days. This is where we find out, because we've only seen 2 padded practices.
Mm-hmm.
And if they go practice after practice after practice and then look at the tape and go, this was maybe worse than we thought it was going to be. We thought we might be able to scheme around it. I think at very least you might see pressure put on Garrett Bradbury. And I'm only basing this on the fact that he was actually benched last year.
Yeah.
If he had not been benched, I would say, no, well, they must see something a little more than the PFF grades or than we do. But he was benched.
Yeah.
And that's not secret information. So they have a guy who suddenly goes from right guard competition to taking center snaps.
Yeah.
kind of projects as that, can play any position type of guy. I think that it's really going to be determined in these next 7 days or seven practices. Will this be a thing or not? If Bradberry has taken all first team reps, we see no Chris Reed, then it's very unlikely it's going to be a thing. But I was going to ask you about what you think of like the JC Tretter situation.
Yeah.
It's like been talked about a lot. Everyone asks me about it, every mailbag and every, you know, podcast. Why do you think he doesn't have a job? Like, is it the NFLPA thing, or is it that maybe he's just worn out? Or it just seems odd that he did so well and played 1,000 snaps last year, and then the man just doesn't have a job.
Yeah, and it could be that he's waiting for the right situation too. And so, you know, he was pretty adamant during all the pandemic stuff about the lack of value in training camp. So maybe he doesn't think that he needs to go to training camp. I don't know. I think that the leverage point on a JC Tretter or any Garrett Bradberry will be after those practices against the 49ers.
Yeah. Okay.
Because
good point.
Those are going to be, you know, they're going to be significant, probably more significant than preseason games in terms of evaluating frontline guys, because they're going to actually participate in those as opposed to, and a little bit that Kevin O'Connell has talked about, like he's gearing up for those. Like he is putting a lot on that. And I'm sure Kyle Shanahan and the 49ers are too. And so that, I think, and that's a pretty good defensive line over there, as you know. If they get run over, or he gets run over, or it's like obvious to people like you and me that there's an issue, then that's where action could potentially happen. I don't know why they would be worried before then. Like I would want to see that, you know, first before I got, you know, to be making any changes.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Sergeant and Mr. Smith, you're gonna love this house.
Bunk beds in a closet?
There's no field manual for finding the right home. But when you do, USAA Homeowners Insurance can help protect it the right way. Restrictions apply.
At IKEA, your dream home is a blue bag away. No matter the size of your space or budget, we've got everything you need to turn your dreams into reality. And now with new lower prices on hundreds of our most popular products, bringing the dream home is even easier. Like the gray Strandom wing chair, was $369, now $299. And the IKEA Plus 365 9-piece cookware set was $129.99, now $89.99. And hundreds more. Shop new lower prices at IKEA-USA.com today.
The one-on-one reps were pretty noticeable. I mean, can notice from the sideline.
Yeah.
If someone's ending up on their back, you're like, okay, this
maybe
really
didn't tie his shoes.
Shouldn't be. Yeah, it could be.
Yeah.
I having seen him play, I doubt that was the case.
Yeah.
All right. Well, here's another one that comes up a lot.
Okay.
And want your perspective on it is the backup quarterback situation.
Yeah.
We have a rule on the show that we don't talk about it. Now, I'll tell you what I think is going on. But it just doesn't matter, because if Kirk gets hurt, there's no one you're bringing in here that's going to matter.
No.
But since it is a point of intrigue, I haven't seen anything to change my mind about either player, even in the slightest, about Kellen Mond or Sean Mannion. But you're getting fresh eyes on them, so tell me what you think.
No, I would say, I mean, I thought there were some interesting things that Kellen Mond was doing early in terms of, like, the things that they're looking for from him are decisive reads, decisive throws. Is he making the right throw for the defense, or did he decide the night before when he saw what the script was where he's going to throw the ball? And that, I think, is something that young quarterbacks who aren't quite along the lines of being ready to play do. And so there were some intriguing things that he was doing in that regard. Like, I think, so this is Friday, the practice on Wednesday where he's dropping snaps, like that was bad.
Yep.
You know, it was just, you know, maybe it was a, you know, combo platter of who was responsible for that. But you know, in a full pads practice in training camp, when you're competing, like putting the ball on the ground before you even drop back in the pocket is bad. The reason that this is a little bit more than just your basic backup quarterback thing is the long term. I mean, he wasn't a first round pick last year, but he was high enough that people were intrigued. Like, one day Kirk Cousins is going to be gone. Is this somebody who could potentially replace him? And I don't think that he was drafted in that with that in mind. Mm-hmm. I don't know that there's anyone around the league who's thinking about that, but that's the one added thing is like, is that when you have a young quarterback who has a chance to make a jump, can he get himself to a spot where you start talking about him as a future starter?
Well, you have to find out
yeah.
if you're the coaching staff. And that goes for a lot of things, right? It goes for even Garrett Bradbury, where they did not want to be overconfident in the evaluation from before or yeah. why the previous coaching staff benched him. And they said it's a first-round pick.
Yeah.
And I'm sure some people in the building were Bradbury defenders because mm-hmm. they drafted him with that high of a pick.
Yeah.
So if you're leaning on some scout evaluations, here's what he needs. All he needs to do is X, Y, and Z. Then if you're Kwesi Adofo-Mensah and Kevin O'Connell, it's like, okay, well, I guess we have to give it a shot then, even if you know some things went wrong with it. I look at Mond as the same way. It wouldn't make any sense to just say you're QB3
no.
and that's it,
yeah.
or just cut him. Like, you have to see if there's something there because yeah. the guy does run a 4.57 and he's got a strong arm. We mm-hmm. saw him whip it down the field like
yeah.
50 yards.
Yeah.
It's just that when you watch these camp practices and you see Cousins, most of the time it's like read, throw mm-hmm. the football, mm-hmm. guy catches it, read, you know,
yeah.
and sometimes it goes wrong. With these guys, they've like barely complete passes.
Yeah,
and I think that it's kind of hurting the evaluation for everybody else
yeah.
when you have backups that can't even complete passes. It's like this has always been Chase Daniels' value, right? Like
yeah.
he can certainly evaluate everybody on the second team or run a scout team. I'm not sure either of these guys can even do that.
No, and that's a concern. And that's why, like, Mannion Mon, like, don't. You know, I'll put this on me also, like, we shouldn't just limit it to that. Like, mm-hmm. there's going to be guys out there as cuts happen. It wouldn't be the first time that a team started a season with a backup quarterback, including this team,
yes.
that didn't go through training camp with mm-hmm. them. I don't think they want to do that for obvious reasons. They want one of these guys or both of them to make them make a very difficult decision about who should be number two. Mm-hmm. But I also think that they have the GM and the coach have the total freedom to basically dump them both if they
yeah.
need to, because they didn't, you know, they did re-sign Mannion, but to almost no, you know, money that they wouldn't get back. They didn't draft Mond. You know, they could, you know, have looked at it as a due diligence situation behind a durable starter. We did it. It didn't work out. You know, we'll bring in the next couple guys. And I'm sure they have a list of people they would consider in that regard as well.
Well, and even last year, Mannion gets cut by Seattle.
Yeah.
He ends up here
yeah.
as the backup quarterback.
Yeah.
Before we move on to the next, is it a thing? Give me the quarterback battle that you spent the most ink on that did not mean anything at all covering training camps or leading up to the season.
Interesting. Probably the Sage Rosenfels Tavares Jackson battle. And I say that not because it wasn't significant, because that would have been 2010. They ended up, Jackson, quote unquote, won it. Sage Rosenfels was traded to the Giants. And that was the year that Favre ends up getting hurt.
Right.
And they actually needed, you know, somebody to come in and play decently. And Tavares got hurt and they ended up just, you know, rumbling down a list of names that they wished they hadn't. But that was the reason that it didn't matter was because it was decided before the first day of training camp.
Right.
You know, Brad Childress had drafted Tavares Jackson and he still had thought of him as a starter at that time. Tavares was a great guy who it just, you know, you could tell it just wasn't going to probably work out, but Brad had not given up on him yet and wanted him to be the backup to Favre. The preseasons, you know, at least Sage is by far the better quarterback in camp. To the best that you could see, he was better. And so really what happened is that Sage had won the battle and had to be traded because that was the only way you could justify Tavares as number two.
Right.
And I wrote that then. So that is, when you say that, that's the one that comes to mind. Mm-hmm. And there's been many, but that one was one of the wildest ones I've seen.
Were you probably weren't in on like John David Booty talk or John David Booty era?
I was around. I don't remember if that was when I was on the beat or if that was when I was doing NFC North blog for ESPN, but I remember when they drafted him and he was he did not work out.
No, not so much. Or McLeod Bethel Thompson, who's still in the CFL.
You know what? I actually did a McLeod Bethel Thompson story this year.
As one does.
This year. Because he went to the CFL, and he's earned a starting job. He is not the best quarterback in the CFL, but he has finally translated the gun that he has in that arm into sustainable play. And he talked about how, like, having the arm that he had maybe was the biggest detriment to his NFL career. Because, and I don't know if we want to go all the way down his life story, but
I mean,
but it was wild to hear him talk about that. Like, my arm was too strong. He said that Norv Turner cut him because he didn't have a changeup. He only threw a fastball, and like that was the terms that they used. And so, and like any Joe Blow like us could watch him and say, how is this guy not just killing it? And he finally has gotten into a spot where he's playing regularly in professional football. So it's kind of cool.
I'm glad I asked. I mean, this show is into journeyman quarterbacks.
I mean,
Sage comes on from time to time.
Good to hear.
And we went to the combine last year. Not a bitter man about being traded because he got to go play with the Giants and Eli Manning. So there's that. But all right, on to more. Is this a thing? Vibes of camp being very positive. We heard Adam Thielen. Adam Thielen gave us a whole dissertation about how the positive coaching, not referring to anybody in the past, wink, wink, but the more positive coaching will help us when adversity comes. I do have to say, Kevin, adversity has not treated this team well in recent years.
They
have not responded well to it.
Yeah.
They have faced a lot of it. And I think by the end, every time something went wrong, another blood vessel in Mike Zimmer's eyeball popped every time. And I do think that it's a thing, but you're going to have to tell me if you care about it or not.
No, I do. And I think it is a thing. And even though like part of it is, it's just natural NFL cycles that you have a coach whose blood vessel is going to pop every time a mistake is made to a guy who's laid back Southern California, grew up in San Diego, Kevin O'Connell, who doesn't seem ruffled by anything. But I actually talked to Thielen a couple days ago for a story that's going to post over the weekend, and he was talking similarly about that. And he was like, the difference is, and he said, this is not just the previous coaching staff. He said, it's every coach I've ever had, high school, college. You know, his first year on the practice squad, I think, was Leslie Frazier, and then Zimmer, and now, you know, every coach he's ever had has been different than what Kevin O'Connell has been. And the difference is that he's just emphasized process over outcome throughout the spring, throughout training camp. They have not lost sight of the fact that you're evaluated on whether you win and lose games, but there's no games to win right now, no games to lose. So he said, and it almost gets awkward, he used that phrase again today, because bad things happen and you're like, is he ever going to rip us? That's what Thielen says. Is he ever going to rip us? And no. And the answer is not right now, because you made a mistake, but that was good, because now I can point it out and say, that's not what we want. We want this instead. So let's go do that. And let's treat everybody like adults and assume that they're going to learn from their mistakes. And so that's where they're at right now. So that is a different vibe. I have a feeling that O'Connell is a little bit of a blow a stack behind the scenes guy. Not necessarily in a, you know, really bad or angry way, but he's got there's indications that that's the case. And he even admitted, he says sometimes when he's losing his mind, you know, Ed Donatell in staff meetings kind of brings him down and back to earth. And so, but in terms of like what happens on the practice field, what happens in player meetings, player interactions with the media, like extremely level, happy, but not, but a little boring and probably intentionally. And that's just his style. That's the style that he, you know, I think he's just being himself, but I do think it's different than what a lot of these guys have ever experienced.
And if you're not blowing up sometimes in meetings, then I'd wonder if you're like on drugs, if you're a football coach, right? Like you are a football man, right? So I don't doubt that.
Yeah.
And there are times where I've thought, especially when Kevin O'Connell was talking about how, quote, productive the backup quarterbacks have been.
Yeah.
I've been like, oh, okay, this isn't the Zimmer era anymore where we just take everything he says about players at its face.
No.
So that is different, but that also manipulated so many players.
Mm-hmm.
So from a reporter perspective, I'm like, yes, Mike, tell us about Anthony Barr.
Sure.
You know, like, tell us about whoever else.
Yeah.
Because even whether it was good or bad, he was giving you what he really thought.
Yeah.
I think O'Connell is going to protect his players and not say anything that's super insightful unless it's positive. And then he'll give you some example. But if it's negative, he's just not going to go there, which I think that in some ways that could be good. In other ways, you can read those quotes as players and be like, what is he talking about? Yeah. Why is he saying this? So it is a very delicate dance of being the player's coach and being the positive guy. Because when I was in Buffalo before I moved here, it was Rex Ryan.
Sure.
And Rex Ryan was like, oh, well, I'm going to have the players back all the time and they could say whatever they want. Yeah. And he lost control.
Yeah.
So that's the thing that Kevin O'Connell has to balance, because this has a lot of veterans that if you're not on your stuff, they'll take the team over for themselves.
Yeah. Yeah. And if he ends up being someone who's only referring to them in positive ways, or he decides to take the blame for something that's obviously not his fault, that'll just make him like many other coaches. And so, and then occasionally he'll, you know, maybe have an unguarded moment when he's really mad after a game or something, and he might say something. But that would make him, you know, we talked just a bit ago about how things he's doing, approaching it in a much different way than a lot of these guys are used to. In terms of his public pronouncements about players, I would put him right, you know, down the middle of most NFL coaches.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
No, I agree. Yeah, they have moved away from the Zimmer style.
Yeah.
I think that we had something that was a relic of the past.
He was a Parcells guy, and Parcells did the same thing.
Right. I mean, you just don't see it. We led the league for sure in, like, bleep this player quotes. I mean, it wasn't even close.
Yeah.
And probably also led the league in, like, ridiculous comments back to questions of ours that were very reasonable too.
Right.
So I've noticed that O'Connell, especially even just coming out and saying, here's what's going on with Irv, that's how it's going to be, like, that is super useful, not just to us, but to fans to know what's just going on with a player. Where Zimmer in the past got to the point where he resented everybody so much, us players, people in the front office, it was literally, do you exist around here? He would just be like, I don't have to tell you anything in camp about injuries, so bleep you. And you're like, Mike, you could tell us if someone's day to day, you know? And so I think that not only hurt him with his public perception, it hurt him with players though, because he just was so, like, angry at everyone and resentful. He's taken shots at people in preseason. Well, I guess we don't have any depth because of our drafting.
Yeah.
And it was like, okay, this needed a reset. And I feel like it's gotten the reset that it needed.
Yeah. And like, and while everything you said is 100% true, I also think my own philosophy on NFL head coaching is that the shelf life is a lot shorter than what people realize.
Oh, yeah.
And if it gets past 4 years, it's either a super unique situation or the owner is just not on the ball and has decided just, you know, like, has fallen for a coach that he shouldn't have. And so when you get to year eight, like, that's like sometimes, like, you're not even thinking straight. You've been in this microscope for so long, it changes you in psychological and sometimes permanent ways. And I think that's it took all of Zimmer's sort of cute eccentricities that we identified early and turned them into monsters, basically. And so I've seen it happen with many other coaches as well. And, you know, you always say, well, this guy is so calm, this, you know, that's not going to happen. Like, everybody gets affected by being in the microscope of a head coach. You know, if you're in the job for more than 4 years, and most of them aren't, and there's a reason why.
Well, also, when they sign Zimmer to a short-term contract extension, you're just asking for trouble.
Yeah.
Because if you're saying, we don't really believe in you that much, prove it. That's tension. That's pressure. And even with Spielman, like, you're trading for Yannick Ngakoue.
Yeah.
You're trading for a kicker. You're just doing, like, all these panicky things. You're drafting centers to start right away.
Right.
Like, why are you doing this? Oh, yeah, because you think you're going to get fired if you don't win. And it's a self-fulfilling prophecy, because then you start doing desperate things and it doesn't work.
Yeah.
Okay, last one for Is This a Thing?
Sure.
Greg Joseph. No, I'm just kidding. I'm not going to.
It's not going to be the last one.
You look great, though.
Oh.
But no, anything Kirk related is anything, and I mean anything Kirk related, an actual thing.
Well, there's probably some things, you know, that are things about him, and the big one is, when you see even veterans undergoing a coaching transition, there's some stress.
Yeah.
And there's some concern that no matter how much money they've made, no matter how long their contracts are for, all of a sudden there's nothing they did that matters. Nothing, you know, they're a rookie like everybody else. Mm-hmm. And probably to credit to O'Connell, but Cousins seems very much at peace and at ease, and he knows who he is. He knows what he can do. You know, everybody externally has talked about all the things that they're hoping O'Connell can get out of him, mm-hmm. That he hasn't produced before. But my sense of him right now is that, you know, and he can be kind of tightly wound, is that he's not, you know, on a relative scale, according to him, or at least based on how he has been in other cases, in other years. Like he seems to have a very, like, at peace is the best thing I can say. And maybe that's because they gave him a couple of extra years, and he knows the worst thing that can happen is he's got $70 million coming his way. But like I said, like, that doesn't, even as crazy as it sounds, that usually doesn't assuage players, veteran players in these situations. They get nervous, they get worried, they get insecure. And I'm not sensing any of that from him right now.
I was really almost taken aback by his press conference the other day because he seemed so relaxed.
Yeah.
Relaxed to the point at the end of the press conference, he kind of admitted enjoying his time off last year when he hit the close contact. And I was Kirk, too
he's
much.
Making a COVID joke.
Yeah. Too far, buddy. Don't go funny. There. Yeah. Right. But he was very relaxed in talking about teammates, talking about the offense, how he's giving feedback to O'Connell. And I also think that Cousins, when I don't know that he always responds to someone like Mike Zimmer very well.
Yeah.
Like, Mike Zimmer is so much in your face and so much out in the public. And somebody told me when they signed him that Cousins was made very uncomfortable by how Zimmer had just crushed Case Keenum for every mistake.
Right.
And I thought, first of all, Kirk, good luck keeping him from doing that to you, because that will happen.
Yeah.
And for the first year or two, he tried. And then it was just like, bleep him. Right? Yeah. We haven't made the playoffs. Who cares? But I think that having someone at head coach who, no matter thick or thin with you, is going to have your back in public and is not going to attack every mistake that you make, as in it's like the apocalypse, which I think that with Zimmer, it was like, you got to lead better. You got to throw more downfield.
Right.
You got to do this. You got to do that. And at one point, he's mad at him for throwing picks. And then the next year, he says,
not taking enough
it's okay
risks.
If you throw picks and you need to. It's like, what do you want from the guy? Even I know this with the media, where it'd be like, Kirk's saying too much to you guys. It's like, wait, are the same Kirk?
Yeah.
The one that we cover?
Yeah.
You know, I think he was just sort of always unhappy with something Kirk was doing.
Mm-hmm.
And if there's anything that becomes a thing, it's that this relationship between O'Connell and Cousins is much better a fit for his personality, which, if it can bring his anxiousness down even a little bit when it comes to big games, maybe that shows up somewhere.
Yeah, and we have to be careful, and I fall into this trap sometimes too, of not judging someone's totality based on their press conferences or how they interact with us for 10 minutes. But just watching him during practice, you know, he's thrown a few interceptions. I haven't seen any, like the signs of stress, like stomp feet or like, you know, I just did a lasso thing with my arm. I don't know what that means, but that's what I did. Or like, you know, head down or curse or like yelling or anything. Like, it happens. You know, you throw an interception. Sometimes it happens. And you're just like, so it's not just, you know, how he's speaking to us or how he's speaking about people. It's just really just the way he is carrying himself every time we see him, anywhere we see him.
I think that does go into the category of a thing. And as long as they're as healthy as they are right now and they're taking this better approach sports science wise, then maybe, you know, the tension doesn't start to get to Cousins. I feel like when things change that he doesn't expect, whether it's, you know, circumstances, defenses, injuries, things like that, that's where it starts to get a little tense for him. But as of right now, this is the calmest we've seen him, I think, in any training camp since he's been here, which I think is definitely a thing. Final thoughts from you. Championship? No, I'm just kidding. How about this? Do you want to tell another camp story, an old school camp story? Did you cover Brock Lesnar?
Oh, yeah, I was there for Brock Lesnar. Brock was great because he arrived at training camp with his girlfriend, who happened to be a professional wrestler, Sable.
Oh, yeah.
And
wow.
And she was promptly dismissed from the grounds because there was a no girlfriend, no wife rule. And so she had to get back in the Porsche or whatever they drove down in and go back home. And she was all done up, you know, and like the same, it was like they walked into the Gage Hall the same way they would walk into the squared circle, yes. I guess, you know, at a wrestling match. And so that was that whole summer was just wild. He was really down to earth. You know, some of us had gotten to know him a little bit when he was a wrestler at the U before he became a pro wrestler. But that was, we never really figured out why they did it, you know, other than the fact that he's a great athlete. Like, he wasn't built to play defensive line. Like, most of his body weight was upper body, and he wanted to wrestle with people. And offensive linemen were happy to wrestle with him because guess what? You're not getting anywhere if you're just all tied up with the, so he wasn't really, you know, that it was never really destined to work. It was fun to watch him cover a kickoff, which he did. And I think those videos are still on YouTube if people want to check those out. But that was, if you ever, you know, want to figure out how you escape the daily routine of training camp, just invite a pro wrestler to try out and you'll find out.
I saw, so my wife started watching a little wrestling during the pandemic.
Yeah.
It was like on Friday nights, and discovered it. And we watched a Netflix show about women wrestlers in the 80s, which is actually really good. It's called Glow.
Yeah.
Great show.
Glorious Ladies of Wrestling.
Yeah. It's super good show.
Yeah.
And so we watched it, and I was like, no, all this stuff is really legit about like all the wrestling. And she's like, no way. Like, okay, we've got to watch it. So we started watching it, and then she wanted to go. Yeah. And so the event here, it was Roman Reigns, former Viking, against Brock Lesnar. Yeah. At the very end, they like slammed each other or something. So it's kind of funny, like, here in Minnesota, two former Vikings out there in center stage wrestling each other. It's pretty crazy. So anyway, well, glad to have you back on the beat.
Thanks.
I have to say, you're not the same as Courtney. You're a little different in your approach, maybe a little more even keeled, maybe a little less aggressive at times. She was more of a leader in the room.
I got
you. So, you know, you're good coming back. You got to take that role. Like,
the only person I want to lead is me.
Yeah.
All I care about is me.
Yeah, that's the thing. Yeah.
I'm from the old school, like, you know, don't be friends with the other people in the media room.
I know.
So don't tell anybody that we're friends.
Things have changed a little bit. No, I won't. I won't. I'll protect you, the sanctity of that.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, but it is great to have you back.
Thanks.
And we'll do this again soon, man. Thanks.
Sounds good. Thanks, Matt.